In a world that's perfect, lies a perfect little town where one team stands alone. But now, something's stirring that will change this place forever.
Perfectville. Welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast for your Miami Dolphins. I am Sam Marcoux, and he is the two-time Hall of Famer, Mr. Christopher Colon. Chris, how the hell are you?
Good, man. I did the little woo. Royal Rumble was Sunday, and we're on the road to WrestleMania with the Dolphins not really having much news and the Patriots still being the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I'm kind of leaning on wrestling right now. So, yeah, woo, two-time Hall of Famer. But, man, I'm good. Life's good. The world's okay. I hope you're good. But it's good to be back. I'm excited to be in front of the mic.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are giving us flack, and rightfully so. This is an extended break, I think is the best way to put it. But, I mean, let's just recap where we were at our last episode and where we are now. So, on our last episode, Chris, we were talking about how the Miami Dolphins need a new head coach.
Got it.
Technically, still on this day at the end of January, the Miami Dolphins still need a head coach. The last episode we talked about moving on from Ryan Tannehill and what our options are going to be via the draft, free agency, trade. Now, the exact same scenario plays out.
That's right.
A month later. The last time we left here, we were all bummed that the New England Patriots were good still. Mm. But now the difference is the New England Patriots are in the freaking Super Bowl again. Tom Brady again. And Bill Belichick's ninth appearance as the dynamic duo. So I know people want to give us shit, but let's be honest. There isn't a whole lot to talk about. Nothing has changed. I mean, go ahead and just go back in your time machine and listen to this on January 5th or January 25th. It doesn't matter. It's going to be the same exact thing. I mean, now, granted, we know a little bit more about the Miami Dolphins coaching situation. We don't know a little bit more about the quarterback situation. We do know, as you pointed out, that Seth Rollins won the Royal Rumble.
Ooh, yeah.
And is going to WrestleMania to face Bork Laser. And we also know that Dean Ambrose, breaking news here for all you wrestling fans, is leaving the WWE in April. Did you see that news, Chris? What are your thoughts on the Lunatic Fringe leaving?
I don't know. I saw that, and I don't know if it might be a work. It's one of those things where WWE doesn't do that. Like, do they just publicly announce this guy's leaving in a few months? Like, is he going to be on TV? I'm torn between it being a work and they're doing a summer of Ambrose type deal, like Punk, you know, win the title and threaten to leave with it to the new promotion that the Young Bucks started, AEW. I could see something like that, but if he really is leaving, I mean, I guess good on him if he's burnt out. Last night on Raw, he got a curb stomp and sold it like The Rock sold a stunner. It was just completely a carnival clown show how he sold that. So part of me thinks he's like, fuck you, Vince, I'm leaving. Sure, I'll lose to Seth, I'll eat a curb stomp, but I'm gonna sell the shit out of it, and there's nothing you can do about it. And then, you know, him with the whole Nia Jax thing. So it could be a work, but if it's real, I hope he's either off TV or just doesn't phone it in. I'd like the next couple of months to see real strong, good at Dean Ambrose, but who knows?
Yeah, look, I don't get to watch wrestling that often anymore. I still make it appointment television to watch the Royal Rumble and usually the night after because it's still just a fun event, even into my 30s here. So I did watch that, and I watched the way he sold that stomp, and that was actually what got me thinking that, no, I guess he's leaving, because that is tradition in wrestling. If you aren't happy with your spot, you're not happy with creative, you're not happy with whatever, that you just make the whole thing a mockery somehow. So I remember when Shawn Michaels was going up against Hulk Hogan. SummerSlam, yep. And he was going to quote unquote lose to Hulk Hogan, and he didn't like it, so he sold the entire thing like it was a cartoon, and it was very obvious even to younger fans at the time, going like, what the hell is going on out there? Like, that's very weird to see him get punched one time and just go throwing himself across the ring into the audience. And it was his way of being like, you know, F you, I'll do what I'm supposed to do contractually, but I'm not going to be happy about it. Anyway, yeah, of course we're talking about wrestling up front, because again, there's not a whole lot to talk about with the Miami Dolphins, and pro wrestling is actually way more interesting than Miami Dolphins right now. But this is a Miami Dolphins podcast, so we should probably talk about the Miami Dolphins. All signs indicate, Chris, that the Miami Dolphins are going to hire New England Patriots defensive coordinator, what is his name, Brian Flores?
I think that's right, yep.
As the new head coach, it looks like he is hiring. So the coach that isn't officially our head coach is hiring a bunch of people to be his
right.
assistants, yet he's not our head coach. So, I mean, it's the whole thing is very Miami Dolphins-esque, if you ask me. And you and I were kind of talking about this off the air. It would not surprise me. I mean, it would shock me, but it would not surprise me if at the end of all this, they're hoisting the trophy and Brian Flores is doing press conferences about, you know, how's it going to be to leave New England to go to Miami? And he looks right into the camera and is like, what are you talking about? I'm not leaving New England. Are you high? We've been to the playoffs or the Super Bowl 9 times in my career here. No, the Miami Dolphins, I'd fuck them. I'm not talking to them at all. I'm going to be here with Bill Belichick for the rest of my career. Can you imagine if that were to happen? I mean, I can imagine it, I guess is what saying.
Yeah, my answer literally was about to be yes, I can. Josh McDaniels literally just did that last year as the offensive coordinator. Maybe Belichick is just trying to fuck with us, you know, former AFC East rival, the Colts. He does them, and then he can do the Dolphins dirty too. And then all of a sudden we're like, you know, hiring Rex Ryan or some shit because we were just scrapping for the next best thing because Flores turned us down. Yeah, it's weird. It's been very weird. He got asked some questions about it. High-level inside guys that break NFL news are just adamant that he's going to be our head coach. So you feel okay about it. But, yeah, Josh McDaniels literally just did this. He had staff and everything hired. And good on Frank Reich for coming into the Colts and keeping those guys on board because what a shit show that was. I mean, like, he hired a staff, then said, you know what, I'm going to stay in New England, and then here comes a new head coach. He could have easily been like, I want my own guys, and good on him for keeping them. But yeah, it's just weird. We're hiring people. Brian Flores is refusing to comment on at the media day for the Super Bowl, just to show how much there's nothing going on for the Miami Dolphins. Armando Sergero's most popular tweet today was that Flores refused to speak in Spanish to a Spanish-speaking news channel, even though he's from Honduras, more at 11. Like, it was just so pandering and ridiculous that was even a tweet. Like, he's trying to stir the pot, and he got a lot of shit for it, rightfully so, because there's just fucking nothing to talk about right now, and the guy's obviously being tight-lipped about it. Because A, he has a Super Bowl in a few days, and B, he's a Bill Belichick guy. He's not going to be like, yeah, so the Dolphins can't wait till next season. Who are we going to draft? Maybe Kyler Murray? I don't know. Like, of course, he's going to be tight-lipped. So them even, you know, asking for quotes is just absolutely absurd.
And we are going to get into the staff that he's building around him and some of the talent that he's got going to the Miami Dolphins, some of the talent that he's keeping in Miami on there as part of his coaching staff, at least by all indications, who he's keeping. But before we get into that, Chris, I did want to mention about Brian Flores. You know, look, he is at this point the odds-on favorite to be the head coach. We talked a lot about some of the other guys out there, the Harbaugh brothers, Chris Richard was out there, some of these other ones. What are your thoughts on Brian Flores unofficially being the next head coach of the Miami Dolphins? Are you for it? Are you against it? What are your thoughts in general about this move for Miami?
Well, that's a good question. I've seen a lot of Dolphins Twitter be and react the same way that I think my feelings are towards it, where I feel good about it, I guess. I mean, like, the defense is good. How much is it actually Bill Belichick that's creating this genius defense? There hasn't been a lot of New England coaches, protégés of Bill that have actually gone on and been successful head coaches. I don't think there's any other than maybe Houston's.
Bill O'Brien's about the only one that I can think of that had any sustained success. I mean, Charlie Weiss had something at Notre Dame, but at the pro level, Romeo Crennel was a washout. You know, everyone else, including Josh McDaniels, was a washout until he eventually goes back, you know, down the road. I can't think of one that that stands out.
And really, O'Brien had to go to college first and go to Penn State and then go to Houston. And, I mean, the guy's got Clowney and Watt and was able to draft Deshaun Watson, had some success there, so good for him. But really, other than that, it's just one of those things where Flores started as he said in one of his quotes today, he made $20,000 a year as like a scout assistant and worked his way up, which you love that. I mean, you do like that as a head coach. He literally burnt the midnight oil. He did the job. He knows what he's doing as far as how a good, great, well, one of the best ever organizations is run from the beginning to end. He's been there through that. So hopefully this is a little different. Who knows? He's put together a pretty good staff. If it is true that, you know, Jim Caldwell's coming and being an assistant head coach, that's genius, man. As a manager myself in the bank, and I was a first-time manager, God, I wish I had a strong, very seasoned assistant branch manager to kind of help out. I can close the door and be like, you know, am I doing that right? What do you think that looked like? That's something he's going to need. And plus, he was a good offensive mind. Not a good head coach, Jim Caldwell, but good offensive mind to the point where Cam Cameron was fired for him, I think, for the Ravens in the middle of the year when they ended up going to the Super Bowl. So he turned some things around. The staff he's bringing in as offensive line coach, wide receivers coach, some repeat names we've seen out there in all that. But I'm kind of excited about it. I mean, I think I heard he's a great guy, great person, demands perfection. Not as vocal as Chris Richard would have been, like a kind of guy that's rah-rah in your face, the players get behind. But as I alluded to in the beginning, I'm kind of more along the lines of Dolphins Twitter right now, that from what I've seen, to where I'm just in wait-and-see mode. There's no way I'm going to proclaim this guy as the next best head coach like everybody was doing with Adam Gase. I'm just going to wait and see, because I'm not optimistic anymore about being a Dolphins fan. That's been drained from my bloodline. It's officially where I'm sitting back and I'm like, show me, because I'm not getting excited for anything on paper anymore.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, he's been with New England for, I think, since 2004. I mean, he's 37 years old, so he's a younger coach. But he's the only system he has ever been in as a coach is with the New England Patriots, whether it's a scouting assistant, pro scout, special teams, assistant offense and special teams, defensive assistant, safeties coach, linebackers coach, and defensive play calling from 2016 until now. So he's been all over the map. I mean, I guess on some level, like you said, he's been a scout. He's been involved with the offense. He's been involved with special teams. He's obviously been involved on defense. And he is coaching under one of the greatest, if not arguably the greatest, head coach in football history. So you do like that. He does have 3 Super Bowl rings as an assistant coach and in that organization. And he is putting good assistants around him. At least on paper, it looks like a nice staff to be around him. But again, I'm like you. I'm kind of like, I'm going to be honest with you. When I heard the name Brian Flores, I thought it was Tom Flores' kid. You know, the old Raiders and Seahawks coach. I was like, who the hell is Brian Flores? I didn't even know he was on the Patriots staff. And then I was just like, okay, who's this guy? Are we just pulling a guy from the Patriots because of the Patriots? I mean, we mentioned a couple of them, and it wouldn't be fair to say that Bill Belichick is completely barren when it comes to his head coaching tree, but the majority of people that have had success at the college level. Nick Saban, Kirk Ferentz, Bill O'Brien at Penn State before he went to Houston, but you also have Eric Mangini. You also have people like Al Groh, Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel, Matt Patricia is still an unknown, Josh McDaniels, like we talked about. A lot of his assistants have gone on to be nothing as a head coach with the Miami Dolphins. Now, that could be just bad casting. It could be the fact that, you know, they just didn't have the right pieces and were fired too early, and maybe expectations were too high. I'm not sure, but I'm definitely in a wait and see approach. I do think that the Miami Dolphins are basically telling everybody, you know what, we are rebuilding. And we're going to lose. We're going to lose a lot in the next year or two. We're going to try to get our quarterback of the future. If things go right and we win a couple games along the way, hey, bonus. But I am not expecting the Miami Dolphins to reload or revamp in a way and go after the New England Patriots or anybody else in the AFC starting next year. And I think Brian Flores knows that, and maybe that's why he's the guy for this job, is that I think they were probably very honest with other people and said, you know what? We're probably not going to win, and you're going to have to be okay with being that coach that shepherds us through some dark times, and hopefully you come out with your players on the other end and win some games. But yeah, I'm with you, man. Was he in your top 3 or 5 out of all those names that were thrown around? I really liked the defensive coordinator from Dallas, Chris Richard. I thought he was the guy, and I was really surprised and somewhat disappointed to find out that he was pretty much off after one or two interviews, and they were gearing towards Brian Flores.
Yeah, I have a feeling with his type of personality, even watching him coach at the Pro Bowl, that when they told him that we're looking to lose, he might have bucked it. I could see him being the type of guy that goes, you know, well, fuck that. Like, I'm here to win, man. Like, you can give me the worst players in the league. I'm going to try to coach them up to win this. There's no way I'm tanking for Tua. There's no way I'm going out there and telling a group of professional grown men that we don't expect to do much the next couple of years when their careers, the NFL is an average of a 3-year career for a player. So, yeah, of course, an Ndamukong Suh and the Cam Wakes are going to play 15 years, but you're talking to the Walt Aikens and you're talking to the guys like the Bobby McCains and the Kalen Balazs that are, and you're going to tell them that you got to wait a year or two before we're successful or doing anything. The clock's ticking for those guys. These aren't like these superstars, bona fide guys that are good to make millions of dollars for a decade. Like, they have to make sure that they make their money, they stay healthy, and they try to win as much as they can every single season. So to look in the face of these guys and tell them that we're tanking, which I find is very odd, Sam. Like, I know we've not been successful, and I know we've had some low expectations going into some seasons the last decade or so, but this is the weirdest timeline right now where Barry Jackson and Armando Salguero are legitimately saying they're hearing from back office people, from people behind the scenes that are saying, we are not winning next year. Like, we fully expect to lose. We are tanking. Like, they're using the word in all caps, tanking. And it's just a very weird spot to be in, because you're one Baker Mayfield away and a couple of draft picks, or one Jared Goff trade up and find him. The Rams were terrible. The Rams were absolutely garbage when they're on Hard Knocks and Fisher was their head coach. They were terrible. And they traded a bunch of draft picks from right around where we are at 13 to go up and get a guy. Now, should we go do that this year? No, there's Locke's not worth that pick. You know, Murray, you're not going to trade up for him. If he falls to 13, you think about it. But are you going to really just say we're done, we're tanking, when it's very easily, the NFL is a much parity league other than the Patriots, where you can get a guy like a Patrick Mahomes that wasn't very highly touted, and now all of a sudden he's MVP. Holy shit, look what he's doing every single day. You have to stop and watch this guy play. When he's coming out in the draft, that was not the talk of this guy. It was very much like, where's he going to go? Oh my God, the Chiefs drafted him? That's odd. You know, they have Alex Smith. He was not this big name, and all of a sudden he's MVP, looking good, MVP of the Pro Bowl. Like, who knows who's going to step into that limelight and come into your locker room, and we're just tanking? We're giving up? It's very weird. It's a very odd place to be right now.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, like you said, I think everyone coming on board has to be aware. I mean, if we're aware of it, the coaching staff has to be aware of it. The players on some level, whether they're going to be happy about it or not, they have to be aware of it. So I am really curious as to how this is going to play out next year. I mean, I guess the people that say, hey, nobody's expecting anything of us, game on, let's go out there and try to, shock the world a little bit, if you want to call it that. Also, Jim Schwartz, I think, came from the Bill Belichick tree, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. It's weird, right? I mean, that's all. And, you know, looking at this, well, looking at Reddit. Go ahead.
Well, and it's weird. And then my thing, too, when you brought up Chris Richard is, and I wanted to ask your opinion on this. I know a lot of people like Brian Flores, but if you're sitting there and you know that Chris Greer and Stephen Ross in this interview is telling them, we fully expect to lose, we're not going to be good, and he's okay with it, coming from that organization he's coming from, it just seems like he's excited to have the opportunity to be a head coach. I'm really torn about the hire, because if that is true, Barry Jackson, somebody I trust very much within the innards of the Miami Dolphins, and he's been doing it for a long time in the Miami Herald, and for him to come out and say that we're tanking and that is true, and he's heard from behind the scenes that people believe that. What did Brian Flores agree to? What did he sign up to? Part of me thinks it's a good job, no pressure. If he wins, great. They weren't expecting it. If he loses, he's not going to get fired. He doesn't have a short leash. But the other part of me thinks, like, how competitive are you? Do you want to get in there and, like, turn this thing around quickly? Are you truly expecting the draft sunshine from Clemson in 2 years? You're going to wait that long? There's no way he's going to walk in a locker room and have the respect of a guy like a Rashad Jones, and he's going to look him in the eyes and be like, hey, man, we're not counting on anything more than 4 wins. It just doesn't sound right.
Well, and you look at that, and you look at a guy like Brian Flores. I have literally never heard his name attached to any other job, you know, ever in terms of getting an interview or as a candidate, whether it's a minor or major candidate. Never, it has not happened, at least as far as I can tell. I'm sure somebody out there on Twitter or somebody else is going to prove me wrong, but I haven't seen his name attached to anything. So to your point, it's kind of like, hey, you want the job? It's not going to be a fun job, but you'll get paid and you'll get your first head coaching gig and get some experience or something. And he's like, sure, I'll try it. But looking at that, you know, that aside, Brian Flores is our head coach, and maybe that is the right move, because if you look at that, Adam Gase was the hot assistant that everyone wanted. He was,
right.
You know, he almost pulled what Josh McDaniels did, and that he went down the road with the Niners and eventually balked at being the Niners head coach. And then ultimately the next year we got him. You look at somebody like, you know, to a degree, the old farmer that was here before him was somewhat of a hot commodity, Joe Philbin, because of what Aaron Rodgers made him, you know, look like in terms of a genius. So we've kind of always chased either a name or the hot prospect, and that goes back to Nick Saban, Jimmy Johnson, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe taking this low-key approach of maybe pulling somebody out and saying, hey, let's see what he can do. Let him learn on the job, season him a little bit. In a couple of years, we have ourselves, you know, a young, dynamic coach that can lead this team for, you know, a generation of football, might be the way to go. But looking at his staff, and you alluded to it, he's got a couple of people that are holdovers from the previous regime, which is always good. I think, you know, strategically, yeah. If they're good coaches or not, it's one thing. But having some familiar faces for some of the players to say, hey, that guy was here last year. Thank God I have somebody I can talk to, somebody that I can, you know, bounce ideas off of or just complain to or whatever the case may be. So our running back coach, Eric Studesville, is going to be back. I think we're also brought back Tony Oden, who was our defensive backs coach. And if you look at it, those are the two units that probably outshined and outperformed
pretty strong,
this past
yeah.
season than any other part of our entire team. Now, with that being said, Matt Burke, gone. Thank God. He's going to Philadelphia to ruin their defense. You have...
Has he been named their defensive coordinator?
No, I think he is the special assistant to Jim Schwartz on the Philadelphia Eagles staff. Okay. So Jim Schwartz is their defensive coordinator.
See, they're fucking morons.
Yeah, no, Matt Burke is just going to stand there on the sidelines behind him and stare off into nothingness like he did
He's
for
that
us
guy
for
that pulls
seasons.
Him off the sideline and makes sure he doesn't get on the field. He's like that guy behind Jim Schwartz. He just grabs his hips and like literally tangos him off the field.
Yeah, what does that job review look like at the end of the year? Does Jim Schwartz sit down with him and say, hey, you know, week five, you delayed a little bit in pulling off the fifth defensive back when we were putting in our jumbo defensive unit?
I'd like a little bit more firmness from the left hand when you grab the hip, when you pull me back. That way I know you mean business.
Listen, when you bring me my water on the sidelines, it better have three ice cubes. Do you understand, Matt Burke? Yeah, I don't know what special assistant to the defensive coordinator means other than that. But anyway, so he's gone. Darren Rizzi, a longtime, you know, special teams coach, has pretty much been here, I think, 15
nine
years,
years.
10
years.
Years. Yeah, 9 years.
Yeah,
9 years. So he's moving on. He's in talks to move to join another team. And you know what? Rightfully so. He wasn't going to be able to stay here. So we've hired his replacement. But then you'd mentioned it. Patrick Graham, Jim Caldwell, Pat Flaherty, Marion Hobby, Chad O'Shea. I looked on Reddit, Chris, 12 Super Bowl rings, 19 conference championship rings, 4 NCAA championship rings on that staff as it currently stands. I mean, there is a culture of winning and how to win at both college and the football level, at the pro level, with this staff. Now, I don't think you can credit any single one of them for any of those rings, but there is something to be said about being around winning cultures and understanding what works and what doesn't. So, you know, I wish him the best. I hope this works out. I'm just I'm skeptical, and I'm hoping to skeptical. I can't even say the word. I don't know if I like it or not. Yeah, you can tell we're out of sync here. It's been over a month since we've done a podcast. I don't know if this is going to work or not, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
But I do like the hires. I like the people that are reportedly coming to Miami, and I'm willing to give them a shot. But cautious would be an understatement.
No, absolutely. Like it's just one of those things where you just buckle in and hope it goes well, but there's no way I'm expecting anything. Yeah, it sounds great that they come from a protege of winning. And like you said, you mentioned it, they know what a winning organization looks like, regardless of where they're from, either college or the NFL. And that's huge. That is big. I mean, I do appreciate that. I hope they come in, they change the signs on the walls, they put some pictures up, they start talking about greatness, what it means, use like examples, like guys showing up on time, being nutritious and eating and not staying up playing Fortnite all night before a game and getting cramps and not being physically able, Devontae Parker, just things like that where they just expect greatness. A lot of the guys that have been interviewed about Flores that I've seen, the Patriots players that have played for him, they haven't been overly gaudy about like how great of a guy, and they're so sad they're losing him. Of course, they have said those things, but I've also seen this play before. I remember when the Cowboys lost Sperano and how the players were just like they hated losing him. They're, it's so sad. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers were so upset to lose Joe Philbin. But it doesn't mean that he was a good head coach. And right. These guys have said things about Flores that are a little bit different than them. Instead of being like a player's guy, a guy they can come to, they've said things like he holds him accountable. He demands perfection. He wants them to go above and beyond. Those are things that they respected and appreciate as a coach. And use that as an actual positive of what he was as a type of coach, instead of like, he's a guy I can be chummy with and rub elbows with and kind of go to if I needed something, some advice about being on the field. He was a coach. He was a great coach. And he wasn't a dick about it. He wasn't a Nick Saban about it, where he'd walk over your heat stroke body and then still demand those same things. He would also be a good guy. So he's at that perfect balance. And like you mentioned before, he's done everything. He's a scout, did offense, did defense, did linebackers, called plays, learned under Bill Belichick. So he's got that complete background. And that's one thing we talked about a lot with Adam Gase. He was sitting there on the sidelines, fake writing down things on the sideline while the defense was playing. I don't think he's going to do that. I don't think when the offense is on the field, he's going to be just like running away. He's going to be paying attention to all facets of the game. And that's what you want from a head coach, from a leader, because they all see that. And I think it's very, very much, other than Drake, really, the only guys that were sad to see Gase go were offensive guys, and the guys that shit all over him were defensive guys. He just wasn't involved, and I think Flores seems like the type of coach that will be.
Given what we know now, I'm pretty sure Adam Gase wasn't doodling. He was actually updating his LinkedIn page to show his job history for potential suitors there, and now the head coach of the New York Jets. As we may have predicted, actually, on the last episode of Perfectville late last year, I'd have to go back and listen. I'm not going to, but I would have to go back and listen and see if that's what we actually predicted or not. But I feel like you did. I think you said he's going to end up with the Jets. And if so, kudos to you. But
how about his press conference, man? Oh, my God. We didn't get to talk about this. His eyes. Yeah. I mean, my Twitter avatar is him. Like, it's just he looked like he was high on so many different things. It's unbelievable. My wife just is adamant he was on coke or some kind of pill form of something, because he looked absolutely absurd.
Well, I will say this. I know people who know Adam Gase very, very well. People that have hung out with Adam Gase in social settings, and people that I know for a fact probably need 28 days to dry themselves out. And it would not surprise me. I am not accusing him of anything, but it would not surprise me if at some point he was suspended for 4 games for conduct detrimental to the league at some point, if they were to piss test coaches. It would be an interesting, it would be really interesting, Adam Gase aside, if they actually drug tested coaches to see what they're on, just to see how they get through their 20-hour work days and stuff like that. But what's interesting,
Bill Belichick's got to be on Quaaludes.
Bill Belichick is a drug. He's just like one humongous pill with a comb over. That's all he is.
His bloodstream is downers. That's
He's just one big depressant pill. But the thing that I thought was interesting is that I literally had about 5 to 10 people text me and be like, dude, what's up with Adam Gase's eyes? And I'm like, they're always like that. He's always bugging out and doing weird shit. And they're like, we've never noticed that before. One press conference with the New York media, and it is a worldwide phenomenon. So for somebody who hates the press as much as Adam Gase hates the press, for somebody who does not want to sit there and deal with this shit, the spotlight is already on him, and it's shining right in his weird, twisty, twirling eyes, because we were in Miami for 3 years, and as fans, as Dolph fans, citizens of Perfectville, we knew about it. You see him bug out all the time, but to that level, to that extreme, I was like, even I was like, wow, that's pretty bad, even by Gase standards. On the Gase meter, that's a 10, but I mean, how do you think he's going to fare with that New York media, especially with a team that isn't great?
No, yeah, all I think about is him in that press conference, and it's like we looked at pictures and memes of him just for days. They literally never stopped. But it's going to be interesting to see. He's got Sam Darnold. I think it's the youngest quarterback he's ever head coached, is from what I saw from the stats. He's got a Jamal Adams, who started in the Pro Bowl at safety. Obviously, that kid is a stud. And he's just going to have to build around it. Obviously, they gave him the – what, the thumbs up, basically, that the playoffs aren't like a end-all be-all for his coaching reign.
Good.
It seems like they're being very cautious with him as well, almost like not saying they're tanking like the Dolphins are, but they're just saying that, like, we expect some bumps in the road, but we're going to allow him to get his team together. I found it interesting that he said that he didn't want personnel control in New York and that it was just given to him in Miami without him even asking for it. And I found that very odd. I don't know if he was just, you know, that was a cover because they were like, dude, we saw how shitty you were in Miami. Like, we're not giving it to you in New York, but you can go ahead and say that you were offered it there just to shit on them, but there's no way you're touching this roster. Like, you just coach what we give you. That was very interesting in his press conference.
Well, I think it's him saving a little bit of face. I mean, if you look at the tail end of his career down here, I mean, one of the things I really liked about Adam Gase is that he never seemed to sit on excuses. He was just like, we played poorly. We didn't coach well. You know, I need to do better. This person needs to do better. Or we cut people that aren't doing what they need to be doing. And then towards the end of his reign, you know, probably because he was trying to you know, make himself more attractive to other coaching
job,
vacancies. Yeah. All of a sudden, you started hearing all these excuses. Well, we played them well, but we caught them while they were hot. Or, you know, we were way too injured to beat this team. Or this, that, and the other. And all of a sudden, you're like, where are all these excuses coming from? And that's what it really sounded like in that press conference there. It was like, well, I never really wanted to, you know, control the roster. Who the fuck says that? Every head coach I've ever seen has always wanted more control because that's their personality. They want to control the whole thing so that they understand and can almost predict the outcome, at least what they think should be the outcome. But yeah, I think you're right. I think they're like, no, you're not touching the roster. You know, you're going to cook with the ingredients we give you, basically. So that's just a little bit of me, I think, him saving face as much as you can save that face at this point. So that being said, you know, look, the Jets are going to be bad. The Bills are still rebuilding. The Dolphins are going to be right now, I think everyone's basically saying we're going to be the worst team in the league. The team has more or less confirmed that we're going to be bad. And if we win a game, we should really just, you know, count our lucky stars. I'm really wondering and curious what the message is going to be to the Miami Dolphins fans next year. I mean, if you're a guy that has to sell season tickets for the Miami Dolphins in 2019, and you got to start calling these fans and be like, hey, we got a new coach, we got a new era, we got a new promotion where if you show up in the first 30 minutes, you get to flip the coin yourself. I mean, it's going to be like minor league baseball out there. I really do think it's going to be like a AAA game. You're going to see shit like, you know, helicopters landing in the end zones before the game where the local mayor comes out and waves to everybody, and then they, you know, I am really curious what promotions the Miami Dolphins are going to have next year. You know, maybe we'll throw that out to the Twitterverse, all the citizens of Perfectville on Twitter. Give us your best Miami Dolphins 2019 promotion that you can think of to get people to these shit show of a games that are going to happen in 2019.
Yeah, not just to the games, but to stay. That's the best. that's the best part. Is I'll never forget being a kid. You know, I got to watch the then Florida Marlins win two World Series as a child and growing up as a teenager in 2003. So I'll never forget those. 97 was amazing. I was 10. My parents let me stay up late because it went to extra innings against the Indians. Edgar Renteria had the base hit. Craig Council scored. Rest is history. It was amazing. Which, by the way, that game is very underrated and not talked about enough. I mean, that went to game 7, extra innings, bottom of the 11th inning, walk off to win the World Series. That is just the dream when you write a script for a baseball movie. So that, and then 2003 beating the Yankees with Josh Beckett in 2 days rest, that was fucking incredible. But other than those two seasons, man, the Marlins were bad. And I remember going to games, living down there, and the promotions they did were like, after the game, you could run the bases. Like, they let us go on the field. I remember being...
Well, you didn't realize those were tryouts to see if they could get anybody.
Exactly, they were. And I remember being Gary Sheffield. I did the whole, like, bat, like, back and forth, and I pretended I hit a ball, and I sprinted from home to first, second, third, and home. And it was the coolest thing. And then I went on Father's Day. They let you, like, go out with your dad and play catch on the field. Like, they really wanted you to stay for these games. So the Dolphins are going to pull some shit out of their ass. You know they are. It's going to be interesting to see what our fans come up with. But, man, Sam, it's going to be some interesting stuff. Like, literally, if you stay till the game ends, we'll give you $10,000. Like, please stay, because it's going to be really bad. And the Browns are good now, and they're the only team that kept us from looking like the laughing stock of the league. So here we come. Whee!
Yeah, I mean, it'll be something like come to the game for free, but it's going to cost you $75 a person to leave. You know what I mean? Like, they'll get their money on the tail end. Like, oh, you want to leave? Well, now it's the cost of a regular ticket, you asshole. How dare you show up to this game? This is awful football. What are you doing? You know, like the first 54 fans that show up actually get to play in the game. Like, you will just have a different team every single week for a home game. Like, hey, the first 53 that show up, put on a jersey, you're playing. Who wants to play quarterback? You know what I mean? Something like that. Let's just figure out. Let's have some fun with that at Perfectville Pod on Twitter, or you can check us out on Facebook or Instagram, which I never update, at Perfectville Podcast. Let us know what your biggest our best promotion for the Miami Dolphins is going to be in 2019. I'd love to hear them. We'll read the best ones on the next episode of Perfectville, which will be, I think, in 2021 at this point. that being said, Chris, we talked a little bit about Adam Gase. We talked a lot about Brian Flores and his coaching staff. What we have not done is talk about the personnel for the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. And really, the position here is the quarterback. Look, I don't need to sugarcoat it. We talked a little bit, just a tiny bit, about what we could do since it looks like we're moving on from the Ryan Tannehill era. We threw out some suggestions on the last episode. I think I mentioned A.J. Feely or whoever the backup quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles is right now. I can't remember.
Nick Foles.
Nick Foles, that's his name, not A.J. Feely.
A.J. Feely. That was like 10 years ago.
Hey, the last time we pulled the backup quarterback from the Philadelphia Eagles, it was A.J. Feely. Although the last time the Philadelphia Eagles pulled a backup quarterback from the Miami Dolphins, they got a fucking Super Bowl ring and made him head coach.
AJ Feely also wore eye black at night, so fuck him.
Yeah, but you know what? AJ Feely had a hot wife. So
they all seem to, even yeah. The bad ones.
Really, the worse the quarterback is for the Miami Dolphins, the hotter the wife. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's weird. One of those things where it's like, look, you're going to make millions in the NFL, Ryan Tannehill, but you're not going to pull much ass because you're not that good. One's going to know who you are. The casual woman is not going to know who you are. It's a perfect – it's the career of Matt Moore. You get paid millions of dollars. You get to hold the clipboard. You're that close to being a starting quarterback. We never get to get hit. You're good. And you make millions doing it. It's genius. She'd rather do that than – aim for the Tom Brady, which you're battling with Giselle. It's not going to happen. So yeah, you mediocre starting quarterback will be the guy you go for. That's it.
Yeah, just tell everyone you're Brian Hoyer, Ryan Tannehill, and you're backing up Tom Brady. That's a more prominent position than starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins these days. But that being said, you know, Nick Foles is an option. I've heard many people come up to me and tell me that they think Nick Foles would be a good stopgap, which I agree, because that was one of my ideas before anybody else ever told me that. I'm like, thank you for listening to the show. You're clearly telling me you don't listen to the show. I appreciate that. But what do you think about the Keebler elf that everyone is falling in love with as the quarterback if he falls to number 13? He's like 5'7" or whatever he is. Tyler, what's his name? Tyler Lockett?
Kyler Murray.
Oh, Kyler Murray. I'd rather have Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, I mean, no. Like Heisman Trophy winner, undersized for sure. You know, he was listed at Oklahoma at 5'10", so I mean, that's not really that small, honestly, considering Drew Brees, Russell Wilson. But he is like 15 pounds lighter than Russell Wilson on the good day. So he is small. But you know what? And this is the line of thinking I have, and I voice this on Twitter. Look, if you're tanking and he's there at 13, draft him. And if he sucks, great, we're still tanking.
Yeah.
If he's great, we fucking got lucky and we got a great quarterback. That's it. I mean, like, why? What is the risk there? Unless there's some kind of mind-blowing Quentin Nelson type guy that's going to be your guard for the next 15 years and solidify the position, or if there's some kind of edge rusher that's going to be the next like JPP or Watt, then yeah, you get him. But if not, and you're just kind of still guessing, throwing darts at the board, fuck it. Somebody posted our last like fucking 10 first round draft picks and we're still in the same spot. Yeah. I mean, like, well, here we are, right? We got Tunsil. We got Tannehill. Pouncey, he's gone. He's Pro Bowl in the Chargers when we thought he was done. Funny how that always happens. But you're talking Deion Jordan. You're talking guys that you're just like, you don't remember anymore. And it's like, who cares? It didn't work out and we lost and we thought we got the right guy. Let's just fuck around and just throw shit to the wind and see if it works out. Fuck it. Like, just go crazy. Just draft, like, a guy from Australia Rugby League in the third round and just fucking maybe he turns into the next Marshawn Lynch. Who knows? Go crazy, because what we've been doing isn't working. And I hope Chris Greer listens to this and he does that. If Kyler Murray's there, yeah, he's undersized, but can he run around and throw a fucking football? Yep. Will he leave and go play baseball? Yep. Fuck it. Draft him. Let's do it. What else is going to happen? What are we going to be mediocre, be 13th overall in the draft? Who cares? There's nothing else that can happen that can be any worse than the last 30 years have been for the Miami Dolphins franchise.
That's exactly what's going to happen. Kyler Murray's going to get drafted by the Miami Dolphins. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go play for the Oakland Athletics. I'd rather go play for the bad baseball team than play football for the bad football team. Dude, you nailed it right on the head. But how's this kind of tying in what we did on the last segment for if we draft Kyler Murray? The first 200 fans get what they think is a Kyler Murray bobblehead doll, but it turns out since he's so short, it's just Kyler Murray that they're handing out to everybody. And he just has to go to everyone's house.
It's like the kid from Willy Wonka that gets shrunken down on the TV.
Yeah. They just make him go to 200 different fans' houses. They have to share them, like the Stanley Cup trophy for the winning team, where they have one day with them, and then they got to move on to the next guy. That's what.
Well, hopefully, unlike the Stanley Cup, they're not drinking beer out of him.
Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, hey, he's yours for 24 hours. You do whatever you want. I mean,
that sounds like slavery a little bit, but okay.
Well, now that you made it weird.
He's yours to do whatever you want for 20. Kyler Murray's like, I didn't sign up for this. I'm going to play baseball.
Listen to me. I 2 months ago, I would let that go, but I have to cut that entire bit because now I'm getting these gigs with Louis C.K. and Bob Saget and all these other huge people. I'm going to end up on the news again, Chris.
So my bad. Damn it.
No. It's totally fine.
Wait, did you say you're going to end up on the news again?
Well, we did have protesters at one of the shows for Louis C.K. So.
Ooh, boy.
No, it was fine. They were very nice protesters. I walked by them. They got out of the way, and then we made 500 people laugh, and the 20 people that were outside could not be heard. So it was totally fine. Okay, so we talked about actually we really didn't. I mean, I guess we just said draft Kyler Murray. That's our plan. So you don't see somebody like Nick Foles or another veteran.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, with the whole leaking and these big prominent media guys for the local Miami Dolphins, the newspaper, the Miami Herald and stuff that have ties with an organization, that just doesn't fit the narrative that they're tanking, that they're going to spend $30, $20 million on Nick Foles to come be the answer. And when we're also planning on drafting Tua or somebody in a 2020 draft, I fully expect us to get somebody like a Joe Flacco, maybe, if he's cut. Maybe a Tyrod Taylor, if he's available. As a veteran guy, maybe, to kind of win us 3-4 games, but nothing crazy. Or, draft Locke, draft Murray, draft Will Greer. I can totally see the Miami Dolphins saying, fuck it, and letting David Fales or Osweiler be our starting quarterback for the entire season in full goddamn Indianapolis Colts tank mode for Luck. That season that Peyton Manning hurt his neck, I mean, it was just terrible. I remember the quarterbacks that were running out there, you had never heard them before, and they just made it seem like he gives us the best chance to win. Like, no one believed that. They didn't believe it themselves, and they still did it, and they ended up getting Andrew Luck. So, I don't know what Stephen Ross's plan is, but he's doing something different. What he's been doing isn't working, and as a business owner and somebody that's worth billions of dollars, you don't get rich doing the same thing that's not working. You change things up. So maybe he's fucking going for broke, and he's going to literally go to tank, and we can sign Jay Fiedler and Jay Feely and AJ Feely. All three will be our starting backup and third-string quarterback.
Hey man, that might be what we're trying to accomplish here. Like you said, if we're gonna tank for Tua or somebody else, but one thing that I also want to bring up, since we're celebrating the new coach and we're celebrating presumptive new regime, whether it's going to be good or bad, that ties in nicely with this show because we're never sure if this is going to be good or bad. But we are going to celebrate the fact here, Chris, that it is late January of 2019. You and I started this little excursion of Perfectville. We broke ground. We stuck the shovels in the ground in January of 2016, which means that we are just recently 3 years old here in Perfectville. We've been incorporated. We have in our little birthday party hat here. We're going to roll out the cake. January 14th of 2016, we unveiled Perfectville on the world. Three episodes. The first one, Dolphins head coach Adam Gase. Episode two, the 2015 Miami Dolphins season awards. My God. And then episode three, the Ryan Tannehill debate. So our third episode was about Ryan Tannehill. And our last episode that we are, not our last episode, but our this episode that I'm talking about right now that you're listening to, also talking about Ryan Tannehill. So as things change, the more they stay the same. So anyways, happy birthday, Chris.
And wow, man.
Yeah, no, happy birthday. 3 years of doing this show.
3 years, it feels like months. I mean, it just really has been nothing but fun. Every time I get behind the mic and we just talk about the Dolphins, it is effortless. I hope you feel, I think you feel the same too. We don't script anything. We don't we don't plan anything.
Clearly.
Clearly. We get on before the show and we're like, let's talk about Flores, maybe Tannehill and Gase. That he looked weird. Let's talk about that. And then all of a sudden, 50 minutes later, we have an episode. So I think we both enjoy doing what we're doing. We're both good at what we do. I enjoy doing it. Obviously, we have listeners, and we've been doing this for 3 years. We're not everybody's cup of tea, and it's actually kind of funny to me now that it's kind of snowballed to the point where there's so many Dolphins podcasts. There's people on Twitter that ask for their favorites, and sometimes we're mentioned, sometimes we're not, and sometimes people are like, saying things like, it's just friends talking. That's what we wanted. That's what we wanted. Like, we literally, when we started this, we said we want to be guys at the bar bullshitting about the Dolphins with a beer in our hand. That's it. Like, we're not going to get crazy video breakdown of anything coaches tape, and you know, Travis and the other guys do that, and they're fucking incredible at it. I love it. I love the things that have spun off from this, the friends that we made. It's been 3 years. It's been fantastic, and I hope we keep doing this for a long time, because we're just literally sitting back and talking about the Dolphins. And even though we suck, God, how good is it going to be to have this show when we're actually good one day? That's gonna be nuts.
Yeah, that is going to be nuts, and I'm hoping it's not another 3 years until we can talk about that again. But you're right. I mean, all those people, whether it's Travis Wingfield, Kevin Dern, whether it's Simon Clancy, who was our first ever guest on this show, whether it's players like Richmond Webb and Greg Camarillo, whether it's comedians like Kabir Singh and Jim Florentine, you know, we've been lucky to have, we don't have guests on all the time. We don't feel the need to, but every now and then when we do get a guest, we're excited to have them on because they're good guests and we think they bring something here to the town of Perfectville. I also want to thank Michael Leva over at DolphinsTalk.com. We are a part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. I failed to say that at the beginning of the show, but that has been just a wonderful marriage for us as well. And yes, we're patting ourselves on the back here a little bit, but damn it, we deserve it, because we have more wins than Adam Gase has over the last 3 years with this with this freaking show. And one of the wins that we've had is the Finzies. And the Finzies are coming back. This is going to be our third season or third year, the third annual Finzies Award. That'll be happening probably in March. We'll have a couple episodes, I'm guessing, before then. But just to let everyone know, I am headed out on the road. I am headed out on tour with some pretty fun names in comedy. So we may be trying to have some episodes in the can that we can just release. So hopefully they're not dated by the time you guys see them. But just so you guys are aware that you guys are listening to this right now, if we go more than 3 days or 3 weeks, it's because Sam Marcoux is actually doing funny things on the road and is sitting in a hotel with his thumb up his ass and not on the mouse key talking to Chris. So I will let you guys know as those things come online and as I go which way and everywhere, but I'll be on the East Coast doing comedy before too long. Actually, in a couple of weeks, I'll be down in Southern California running around. I'm actually doing a casino show, Chris, and it is myself and Dat Fan, the first winner of Last Comic Standing, and going on in the same casino is Snoop Dogg.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I have a feeling Snoop Dogg's going to outdraw. I might no-show my own show to go to the Snoop Dogg concert.
Like, put a cardboard cutout out there and play like a recording of like a former set.
Yeah, it sounds way more interesting than anything I'm going to say on stage for 20 minutes. So, no, it's getting fun out here doing the comedy thing.
Where are you going on the East Coast?
I'm actually going to be doing some gigs for some corporations on in the Tampa area in late February. Okay. Yeah. So just doing all kinds of fun stuff here, there, and everywhere. It's good times. But anyway, we will be doing some shows. We're going to start throwing out some of the categories for the Finzies before too long. And as you guys know, the Finzies are always fun because we always have special guests. It's like our own little Royal Rumble. We always have a surprise guest that pops up. There's always something good to do. There's always all kinds of fun comedy stuff. So, Chris, anything else you'd like to bring up as we stop patting ourselves on the back? Anything about the Dolphins? Anything about Adam Gase's coked out eyeballs? Anything else about anything in life in general that you'd like to bring up?
No, and I don't want to start a whole thing about it because we're ending the show, but please do not sign Le'Veon Bell. He wants to sign here because he wants a rap career. Absolutely not.
No, that is that, you know, that'll be our next episode is the what, maybe we'll call it the Le'Veon Bell Award, which is the worst signing from last offseason. We'll call it the Le'Veon Bell Award for the Finzies.
There you go.
People that we'll nominate people we don't want to win that award, or you know, that we don't want to sign. So we'll figure it out. But I agree with you, there's no need for Le'Veon Bell. We have good running backs. No need to upset that apple cart and spend way too much money on a position of her guy that will only be here one or two years and move on. So I agree with you. With that being said, Chris, as part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network, there's only one last thing to say, and that is goodbye from Perfectville.
Later.